is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhibi in Washington, and here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Military solutions of this kind cannot solve the issue. Only a political process can. The problem with a political process is I just don't see who's going to lead one.
That was former Jordanian Foreign Minister Marwan Muash on the difficulties in creating a reasonable solution to the Israeli-Hamas conflict. Details coming up. Also, much of Ghana was hit by power outages. And South Africa's Springboks get ready to battle New Zealand's All Blacks in the Rugby World Cup Championship. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. A short time ago, an Israeli military spokesman said the Israeli Defense Forces will significantly increase its operations in Gaza. International news media reporting there is heavy bombardment of Gaza going on now. Also, about 10 aid trucks have crossed from Egypt into the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian territory has been under an Israeli blockade since Hamas militants from Gaza attacked communities in Israel on October the 7th. The United Nations warns food, fuel, and medical supplies have nearly run out. Also today, the Gaza Health Ministry, run by the Hamas organization, says more than 7,000 people have died in Gaza since fighting began. Israel says more than 1,400 people there have died, and Hamas holds more than 220 people hostage. Also today, Hamas rejected Israeli accusations that it uses hospitals as military command posts. 3 weeks into the deadliest war between Israel and Hamas, some political observers say it is already clear that the bloodshed has flipped long-standing assumptions in Israel and the region upside down. Our reporter in Jerusalem, Linda Gratstein, briefs us on the latest and says Israelis' sense of personal security has been shattered, with the country's security service and military intelligence admitting failures that led to the Hamas attack.
There was a barrage of dozens of rockets at central Israel earlier today, including one that hit an apartment building in Tel Aviv. There were four Israelis injured, one was relatively seriously. But it's a sign that Hamas still has the capability to fire long-range rockets and that can hit Israel. At the same time, Israel overnight conducted its second sort of small ground incursion into Gaza. It sent tanks and troops in looking for Hamas infrastructure, and there were no injuries. And Israel came on the Israeli side, Israel came back out. And Israel continues to bombard Hamas with airstrikes. And the Palestinian Health Ministry says that 7,000 Palestinians have now been killed in the Israeli airstrikes in the past 3 weeks.
So, Linda, on October 7th, Hamas militants, undetected, moved into Israel, killing over 1,400 people, the vast majority civilians, capturing over 200 hostages, and military observers actually described that scenario as Israel's security apparatus falling asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to understand how this happened. Israel has all kinds of technology and had been observing Hamas training. And in fact, the day before had seen this kind of coming. And these observers, as you say, mostly girls, by the way, had warned their superiors that Hamas seems to be doing something. And the decision was, well, it's just another military drill. And in addition, it seems that a lot of the bases were not, it was a Jewish holiday. It was both the Sabbath and a holiday. And so a lot of the soldiers were sent home. And I think it goes to a fundamental miscalculation about Hamas. And they really, the Israeli, both political and military establishment, believed that Hamas wanted a peace deal with Israel, wanted to make things better for Palestinians in Gaza, and was not going to start a war. Now, this operation was apparently planned for almost 2 years. Now, it's hard to understand exactly what happened. And I assume that after the war is over, there will be a commission of inquiry. But several senior Israeli military officials and political officials, including the defense minister, the chief of staff, have taken responsibility. The only person who hasn't, by the way, is Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Israel now has vowed to destroy Hamas, but as we talked about it yesterday, this will not be an easy task against a group with significant public support and an entrenched military presence in Gaza. And even, Linda, if Israel prevails, it has not presented a clear exit strategy.
Right. That's the big question. In other words, eventually Israel will be able to destroy Hamas, at least militarily. The Hamas has a network of tunnels running underneath Gaza, and Israel has, you know, said that it can no longer coexist with Hamas in any kind of a military Hamas. But what happens afterwards? I mean, you know, from 1967 until 2005, when Israel withdrew from Gaza, Israel controlled Gaza, and it was responsible for the health and education and, you know, taking out the garbage in Gaza. Does Israel want to do that again? I mean, Gaza is very crowded, very, very poor. The majority of the population lives on less than $2 per person per day. Unemployment is 46%. And that's sort of one of the sad things, is that basically nobody wants Gaza. The alternative is the Palestinian Authority, which controls the West Bank. But it's not sure, it's not clear to me if they're in a position to take over Gaza, or if they even want to, if they were. The head of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, is very old, weak, corrupt. So basically, this whole thing is just sort of falling apart before our eyes. And it doesn't seem that Israel has any kind of an exit strategy or a plan for what comes afterwards.
That was reporter Linda Gradstein speaking with me from Jerusalem. Jordan has spearheaded Arab calls for a ceasefire in the Gaza war as casualties mount. Unexpected Israeli ground invasion to destroy Hamas, Arab analysts warn, could escalate into a wider regional conflict. Israel's peace partner, Jordan and Egypt, decry any mass transfers of Palestinians to their countries. David Gavlak reports from Amman.
As civilian deaths rise and the humanitarian situation deteriorates in Gaza, Israel has vowed to wipe out Hamas, designated by Israel, the United States, and the European Union as a terrorist organization. Former Jordanian Foreign Minister Mawan Moasher told an online Carnegie Mideast panel this week that eliminating the militants may prove difficult, as Hamas has become an ideology and not just a movement. Moasher warned, "If the Hamas military machine is destroyed, I am afraid that many other Hamases will spring up."
Military solutions of this kind cannot solve the issue. Only a political process can. The problem with a political process is I just don't see who's going to lead one.
Moasher says that if Israel does not engage in a peace process leading to the establishment of a Palestinian state, nor wants to govern the Palestinian majority inside the country, then he warns it may try to effect a mass transfer of Palestinians to Jordan and Egypt, which is unacceptable.
The logical conclusion that countries like Jordan and Egypt have is that if Israel does not want the first two options, then the only third option is to try to get rid of as many Palestinians as possible. That is the real concern.
Former Egyptian lawmaker Amr Hamzawi says while Egypt is working to allow aid in for the people in Gaza, it is also very worried about any scenario of displacement.
The Egyptian government position is fully backed by the popular sentiment. We will not let our national sovereignty or the borders be abused to solve an Israeli problem of not accepting a two-state solution, of not accepting an end to the occupation, and getting rid of the Palestinian issue.
On Thursday, Arab foreign ministers from Egypt, Jordan, Kuwait, Bahrain, Morocco, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates condemned what they call the targeting of civilians and violations of international law in Gaza. They said Israel's right to self-defense does not justify breaking the law and neglecting Palestinians' rights. They also expressed concern about a wider regional conflict developing. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant told a press conference that Israel had no interest in expanding the war. Del Gavlak, VOA News, Amman.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Much of Ghana was hit by power outages for hours starting yesterday after the West African country's power transmission company warned of limited gas supply for power generation. The Ghana Grid Company said a 550-megawatt gap at peak time, around 10% of the country's installed generation capacity, would affect supply to consumers, but did not provide any reasons for the shortage. Ghana Gas Chief Executive Officer Ben Asante told Reuters the issue was gas delivery because the West African Gas Pipeline Company's pipeline, which delivers about 100 million standard cubic feet per day of gas from Takordi to Temma, has been taken out of service. Power cuts are common in Ghana, but the one yesterday was one of the most extensive reported. Next week, African governments and private sector representatives will gather in Johannesburg with officials and business leaders from the United States to debate the future of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. The U.S. trade initiative gives products from certain African countries preferential and duty-free access to American markets. Darren Taylor reports.
A report from the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative says the African Growth and Opportunity Act gives 36 sub-Saharan African countries duty-free access to the American market for almost 7,000 products. These include fruits and vegetables, oil, minerals and metals, and clothing. In 2021, says the report, eligible countries exported products worth almost $7 billion to the U.S. It says South Africa is by far the biggest user of AGOA, sending goods worth $2.7 billion to the U.S. in 2021. The South African government says its largest AGOA exports are platinum, metals, and vehicles. Other major beneficiaries are Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana, and Angola. At a recent media briefing in Johannesburg, the message from Assistant U.S. Trade Representative for Africa, Constance Hamilton, was clear. AGOA must be improved.
The U.S. International Trade Commission just finished a study to look at AGOA implementation. One conclusion that they made is that AGOA has not met the expectations we had in 2000. While they're not saying that the program hasn't been useful, because some countries have benefited greatly from AGOA, but the majority have not. Not addressing and not trying to change the program and make it better is a wasted opportunity.
The overall benefit has been uneven. A report by the Brookings Institute, a U.S. foreign policy research organization, says while some countries, such as Zambia and Mozambique, saw exports to the U.S. jump 90%, other countries have seen little benefit. There are many reasons for that. The Brookings report, and one by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, note that problems with infrastructure, legal trade frameworks, and production capability make it hard for some countries to benefit fully. Another challenge the Brookings report notes is that China has dramatically ramped up its imports of African goods, and European nations also seek to boost their trade with the continent. Hamilton noted that governments need to make sure their business owners and farmers know how to utilize AGOA. She also says AGOA must help Africa to develop its business infrastructure.
The cashews that are being produced in West Africa, how do we process those cashews in the continent as opposed to exporting them to another country that does all the processing? How do we encourage the development of a vertically integrated textile industry, so that all the inputs that are going into the apparel right now that are being produced in Lesotho and other countries are basically coming from Asia? How do we put that production on the continent?
Next week, U.S. officials and business leaders will discuss AGOA's future with their African counterparts at a forum in Johannesburg. The goal is to find ways to improve AGOA before it goes to Congress for renewal by 2025. The U.S. allows countries into AGOA based on a number of factors, including that they subscribe to democratic values. Deputy Assistant Secretary at the U.S. Bureau of African Affairs, Joy Basu, said next week's forum would re-emphasize these factors.
The AGOA program is about more than just trade. It's really a strong opportunity for diplomatic engagement. AGOA also supports policies to reduce poverty, to combat corruption, to protect human rights. We hope that those can continue to work together to create the opportunities that we know we need for many, many young Africans to bring their talents and their goods and services to the world.
She said AGOA is set apart from other trade treaties because it reinforces issues such as fair trade, democracy, and workers' rights.
We know the evidence shows that those are mutually reinforcing, that the right enabling environment for all people is what enables companies to have a certain amount of predictability, to have a certain amount of skilling, and to really raise standards across income levels and across industries. We think it's really important for inclusive economic growth. And that is what the goal of AGOA is. We really are trying to create economic growth through this program that upskills the people and leaves the communities better.
Some countries have been dropped from AGOA because of their human rights records or after military coups. Among them, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Guinea. AGOA is up for renewal in 2025. Several members of Congress, who will ultimately decide whether this happens and if new countries are admitted and others left out, will attend next week's forum. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz this weekend is making his third visit to sub-Saharan Africa in 2 years. He will visit major energy producer Nigeria as well as Ghana, with migration flows and instability in West Africa also on his agenda. German Greens Party legislator Anton Havretter said the reason for the trip comes from the realization that Germany and Europe need Africa more than European leaders thought. He called it a rude awakening when people realized the EU needed allies against Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The war between Israel and Hamas has lent new urgency, in particular, to the EU's need for energy. Reuters News says after Russia's invaded Ukraine in February 2022, Germany turned to Qatar for the liquefied gas it needs to fuel its industries. Potential disorder across the Middle East has provided a reminder of the need to diversify energy sources. Analysts say Berlin could help with chronic underinvestment in Nigeria's oil sector. It could also make use of Ghanaian labor, especially informational technology experts for Germany's medium-sized companies. And in the world of sports, defending champion South Africa will play arch-rival New Zealand in blockbuster Rugby World Cup final on Saturday at the Stade de France near Paris. It brings together the two most successful teams in the competition. Each is bidding for a second, fourth world title. It's a rematch of the epic 1995 final, which South Africa won in extra time, 15-12 in Johannesburg. Marian Nyker filed this preview from Durban, South Africa.
For over a century, these two great rugby nations have competed against each other, building immense tradition. Saturday's clash in Paris has the makings of an epic battle. As they round up their preparations for the match, both teams have been vocal about their respect for each other, further endearing them to neutrals around the world. All Blacks assistant coach Jason Ryan and Springbok fullback Willie Leroux shared their thoughts about the history of their rivalry.
It's been a massive tradition. It's awesome, you know. And they bring a special part of their game that, you know, I think makes it just a great rivalry. And to be doing it in a World Cup final was just, you know, that's when you want to be playing. That's when you want to be coaching. It's all you want to do is set yourself up for a gold medal. So we're looking forward to that, and the history is going to be pretty special.
Oh, there's always respect. I think the rivalry goes back a long time, and the games that's been played against each other is always, it's hard fought, and then after the game you can see the guys, they gave it all. So there's definitely a lot of respect between Springboks and the All Blacks.
The Boks have a golden opportunity to defend their title. Leroux, who was part of the team that lifted the William Webb Ellis Cup in Japan 4 years ago, says their success is testament to the hard work put in by everyone involved in Springbok rugby.
Yeah, we've been through a lot of tough games, a few games that has tested us. But as a strong squad, not only the 23 that's playing, but the other 10 guys that's training against you, giving you pictures the whole week. And then the staff and everyone else that no one else even sees, how everyone in just squad just buys in to the same plan and for that same goal. Yeah, that's quite special.
It's been a busy 6 weeks for both teams, with one last mountain to climb. How have both teams prepared for the gold medal match? Unsurprisingly, South Africa's Khwaga Smith says they've opted to stick to their processes.
No, I think the coaching staff of the Springboks try to keep everything the same. We've got a main program that we follow, and not to make some games bigger and some games smaller, because that's where you fall short. If you sometimes play against lesser of a good team and you think, yeah, it's going to be an easy week, and then, yeah. So we try to keep everything the same. Obviously, there's a bit more pressure this week, but we try to focus to our process and train the same as what we did.
It's a sentiment that All Blacks flanker Dalton Papali says is true for his team as well.
They keep harping on about sticking to the process, sticking to, you know, the plan that's got us to where we are now. You know, week by week, just focusing on that and not overthinking it too much, because, you know, the process is what has got us here.
There's a level of expectancy on the Springbok team. By 9 p.m. local time on Saturday, expect the country to come to a standstill as fans clamour around their television sets, bars and public viewing areas.
I think we all know what it means for South Africa. I think all of our friends are supporting us, and they're just so excited for this weekend. People are making plans to get together, to watch the games together. So, we know they stand behind us, and we have to put up a good performance for all of them also.
New Zealand, meanwhile, despite their great history in the competition, were not given much of a chance by pundits, given their poor form heading into the competition. Papali says they did not allow criticism in the press to affect their plans.
I think the boys are in a pretty good spot. Like I said in that comment, you know, this is the moment on top of the mountain that everyone chases. You know, every kid, you know, growing up, you know, you sort of have that thought, oh man, you know, one day I'd love to be there. But to make it a reality and to go through all the hard yards, you know, getting to this game, it's making out it's going to be a big one. And this is the game that we got to leave it all out there. So looking forward to it.
The iconic All Blacks haka will set the tone for this bruising encounter. Both teams stand on the precipice of history. One team will become the first nation in World Cup history to hold 4 titles. I'm Myron Naika in Durban, South Africa.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Sewuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local